Middays with Mannix and Mannix.
I was going to listen to that, but then I just carried on living my life.
With Jeff Mannix.
What kind of bear is best? Black bear.
And Taylor Mannix.
I'm a Tony Romo fan and he retired, so now I bleed green. Go Birds!
Call 207-775-2217 or 1-866-811-9505.
Phone is ringing. Oh my God.
Every single thing that every fan does at home or at the stadium makes a direct impact in the game.
It's about to get all stupid up in here!
Middays with Mannix and Mannix begins now. Here's Jeff and Taylor.
The weather outside is weather.
It's called Two Brothers. Two Brothers. It's just called Two Brothers.
You're Larry Bird.
Good afternoon! And welcome to our final hour on this Thursday edition of Middays with Mannix and Mannix. Jeff and Taylor on the microphones. We'll close it strong with Mannix versus Mannix, brought to you by Town Fair Tire at the end of the show. Right now, though, time for us to talk some New England Revolution soccer. The Revs are officially at the World Cup break in Major League Soccer, and here to talk all about that with us, he joins us every week. He is the broadcast voice of the New England Revolution, Brad Feldman, back with us. Brad, thanks for taking some time with us again, man. How are you now that the World Cup break has hit?
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Taylor. Yeah, I'm well. Thanks for having me on. Things are good, you know. It doesn't feel like a break. There's been a lot of World Cup and specifically Matt Turner-related media this week, and it seems like the days are filling up and you can feel all of a sudden. You know, I think some people have said there hasn't been a lot of buzz around the World Cup. Well, since the roster announcement, all of a sudden it feels like it's on everybody's dashboard a little more prominently. So, yeah, things are cooking.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe we shouldn't bury the lead, right? I love how you kind of led it with Turner. Let's talk about that, right? I mean, he seems to be, especially in these parts, a huge story. How excited are you for him, and what are you looking for from him in this tournament?
Well, I think the question everybody asks out of the gate is, you know, is he the presumptive starter? And right now, you'd have to say the answer is no, just based on the friendlies and the camps leading up to the World Cup. Obviously, is automatic qualifiers. It wasn't as much of a bake-off with NYCFC keeper Matt Freese as you normally would have in a World Cup cycle. And so, you know, really, you know, Matt Turner's had to play himself back into the conversation, but he is very much in that conversation. It's not a lock. You know, I spent some time talking to Kevin Hitchcock directly about it just today. And, you know, we're obviously all biased in these parts, but whether you're using the eye test, the vibes test, or the modern, you know, advanced analytics test, all of those tell you that right now, Matt Turner is the form keeper. Freese, excellent shot stopper, and he can get into runs where he's, you know, standing on his head. But Matt A has the experience. He's played as a starter in the World Cup for the U.S. before. He's having an excellent season in terms of goals prevented. He, you know, top of MLS and then backstopping the Revs to a better season than NYC so far. He's making big stops late in games to preserve points in the standings. And, you know, you can see the confidence is back. And, you know, a lot of the returning outfield players, you know and like playing. You know, they say that Freese is a calming presence, which he is, but Turner is an energizing, you know, confidence-injecting presence back there. So, you know, I think that with a couple of friendlies starting in Senegal, you know, you might see 45 and 45, and that competition that was lacking in the buildup is there, and it's going to be, you know, the position is going to be there to be won. There are some people who feel that against Paraguay, it's going to be Turner because if Pochettino starts Freese and it goes wrong for the U.S., like they need to get a good result. They need to beat Paraguay, who are good, but you know, like they're the favorites to win their group because of the home field advantage. And you know, Turkey, you know, Australia's bottom of those predictions, but you know, Paraguay, Turkey, not easy games. And so if you don't get 3 points, you know, in the first one, then it starts to get a little nervy. So, you know, if you start the guy who's out of form over the guy who's been playing great for his club, then Polk is going to, you know, feel a lot of, you know, a lot of heat for the media and the fans. So I think that Turner on the vibe scale is way ahead of Freeze. But again, we're in New England, where we favor the New England guy, and the national media is in New York, where Freeze is located. So, you know, our lens and our perception might be a little different. One note, which I probably should have started with, which is that from a narrative standpoint and also a personal standpoint, like to see Matt Turner back in, not just getting the selection, not just getting the call, but to see it with the wind at his back, the way it is for the reasons I just described, is really, really gratifying for me as somebody who covers the team week in, week out, year after year. Because, you know, we were all so proud when he went off to the Premier League and Arsenal. And, you know, his time with Arsenal, he just didn't get a lot of opportunities. He had one or two rickets in cup games. And then he went to Nottingham Forest, which was, you know, like, it's the soap opera there. And, you know, nothing seemed to break Matt's way while he was in England, you know, and he deserved better. Now, you could say he's compensated well for his time over there, but it should have gone better for a guy who's that good and who's, you know, believes in himself. But when he came back, some of that self-belief, I thought, to my eye, was gone as a player. And his time at the Reds and the last season and now has been so restorative and so redemptive that just the fact that we're having this conversation, you could hear in my voice, I'm legitimately happy for the guy. Like, he comes from a great family. He's a guy who's a third stringer, came out of mid-major Fairfield, played in the lower league. He was a third stringer. He was not supposed to be the national team goalkeeper. And now he's going to the second World Cup. So it's great stuff.
Yeah, it's really awesome stuff, and we're certainly rooting for him here. I'm kind of expecting he might get the net at starting in Paraguay, but we'll see ultimately there. And I also, just kind of to follow it up, to kind of think it's interesting that all three goalkeepers chosen were all from MLS, is Chris Brady from Chicago Fire, who's never been capped by the national team before, was the third choice. So I don't know whether that's a good sign or a bad sign for the U.S. men's national team.
Well, how's this? Well, yeah, but okay. But Matt Turner did go to Europe.
And, yes.
You know, the U.S. traditionally has produced goalkeepers, right? So the fact that our domestic league has good keepers is not a surprise. I think MLS is closer to the pack. I mean, we're not going to kid ourselves and say it's the Premier League or La Liga or that level, but there are all these other good mid-tier European leagues where a lot of the, you know, younger MLS players who transfer to Europe go and they get loaned out to, and they'll tell you, you know, you go, other than the top two or three teams in Portugal or Belgium or Netherlands even, you know, that you know, the standard, either the style of play is more sort of consistently recognizable, these kids grow up in their system, and so adapting to it can be difficult, but in terms of the athleticism and the soccer IQ of the average player, you know, MLS in some ways is stronger, in some ways is, you know, still behind, but it's very much comparable, you know, on aggregate. And so I think to say that we have, you know, I think we need, listen, the average player coming out of MLS now, right, like, and the academies, is very, very, very good, very good functional pros. Where we are still lacking is that genius talent that, you know, not just a Messi or even, you know, a tick below, like an Eden Hazard. We haven't quite gotten there yet. And, you know, Pulisic, he had an up and down season. Gio Reyna hasn't fulfilled his promise, although still has a lot, but he's not in that conversation. You know, we've talked about Landon Donovan, Clint Dempsey over the years. We don't have a guy like that right now. But, like you look at the forward position, Balogun and Pepe, like, that's a huge upgrade to the U.S. Squad for me over what they had at the forward positions, you know, for the last World Cup. And so I think that, you know, if you want to talk overall roster construction, we can too. I think that I don't want to oversell this group. I think, like, being completely honest, in our dreams with all these guys going over to Europe beyond the goalkeepers who, you know, who are domestic league based, as you say, I thought it would be further down the line. You know, if you asked me 5-8 years out, I was really, really optimistic, but I think it was also maybe unreasonably optimistic. I think, you know, things, you know, it only takes 20 years to become an overnight sensation, right? One of these days we are going to have that talent. In the meantime, the overall level of the sport in this country, you know, just look at the soccer culture in Maine, you know, And, you know, it's taken huge leaps forward. And I think that's reflected in the overall pool. And so getting back to your original question, Jeff, I'm not surprised at all that we have, you know, three goalkeepers going to the World Cup with a European manager that are all domestic league based. To me, that's, you know, not out of the realm of the expected, and it's not a cause for concern. It's actually a plus because you got Turner and Freeze to choose from.
Yeah, absolutely, Brad. And to speaking of domestic, let's bring it back there because I do want to talk about these Revs because they have been such a great story in this, I will call it, I guess, the first half, I will, before this break of the season. Tough result, 1-0 at Bank of America Stadium, but what's been your read on that loss? But more importantly, the bigger picture, which is this team just looking much better than the last couple seasons early on.
Yeah, and we talked about it week in, week out, and I'm not going to give you the whole Marko Mitrović, man manager, motivator, little magic.
Come on,
that
why not? Kind of, we'd love to hear it.
Well, no, but that's it. Just keep hitting the M's for alliteration's sake. But no, the guy's got, and I think some coaches come in and make a sudden impact, and you say, that's good, but that's not a long-term recipe for success. The way he does it is so holistic, so authentic, so genuine that you feel like it could be sustainable. Now, the one criticism I've heard of him is like, where does the guy find the time to have such good relations with so many people? You know, not just the players, but the whole team staff. From the front office to the kitchen staff. He's like, he knows people's names. He looks you in the eye. He talks to you, and it doesn't feel like baloney. It feels honest. And it's because the guy, I think, actually does care. He cares about people. He's an empath, but he's a hard-nosed competitor. If you go to training, he gets into these guys. It's not like, bravo, bravo, attaboy all the time. Like, you'll hear that a lot from him. Guy makes a mistake, makes the wrong run at the wrong time, or, spaced out on a set-piece marking assignment, he'll stop training and, like, rip the dude, But the guy, he doesn't then have to build the guy back up, because what we've seen over, just a six-month period is he has such a strong foundation or relationship with most of these guys that they know that it's from a caring place. And so I think that's reflected in the results. The Revs are in fourth place going into the break. It would have been great to get a point at least out of the Charlotte game. Circumstances were, they still don't have Campana, and it's a heartbreak for that guy that he can't go to the World Cup with Ecuador. He worked so hard to get there, and it's his body's not cooperating. But Luca Langone had a family tragedy down in Argentina, mm-hmm. and had bereavement, so he was not at the game, and it showed. Where the Revs were against Minnesota, just torching them down the flanks, and even with Miller and Fagundes out there, they just didn't quite have that edge. They did play up half a man for half an hour after a red card, so you would say that the Revs should have been able to conjure a goal. But I'll say this about Charlotte. They're better at home than they were with the Revs beaten by one goal in Foxborough 3 weeks earlier. And one of the reasons for that is Tim Ream, who's in the U.S. national team squad for the World Cup. He's 38 years young, right? Like, he's old guy, but he's so positionally sound, organizes so well, reads and anticipates it so well that you could see the uptick in the collective team defending by Charlotte versus that same team 3 weeks earlier when Ream wasn't there. So no Langone for the Revs. Yes, Ream for Charlotte. You're in Charlotte, where they've traditionally been very, very tough to beat. And it was a difficult assignment for Mitrovic's men. Again, like, if you're the Revs, you would have said, yeah, we should have been able to up a man to get a goal, get a draw, get an extra point in the standings. Then you feel like you have a little more momentum going into the two-month break. But overall, Taylor, getting back to the beginning of this, like, yeah, all positives, right? Like, what a turnaround season at the midway break here. To be in fourth place, to be in the playoff places, to have that run where you won 7 out of 8 and, they've won 7 out of 8 at home in Foxborough. And it's really, they've looked competitive or better than everybody they've played against except for Nashville. And from February to May, you could see the progression from New England, where they're much closer to Nashville. Even though they lost 3-0, that could have gone a little bit differently, and you're talking about a tie game, one goal game. They're in the conversation, for the top seeds in the East in the playoffs going forward.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, you mentioned all the positives too. It's funny, I have a couple friends who I didn't even know were Revs fans until this year, because it feels like now that the team's better, they're more than happy to be like, yeah, man, Carlos Hill.
Jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I know. Well, it's so funny. They're like, dude, you know about, because they're like, oh, you're a soccer guy, right? I'm like, yeah, they're like, dude, this Carlos Hill guy, you know about him? It's like, we know a little bit about him. You know about him a little bit. But yeah, no, it is, you mentioned it, Brad, but it's great to see even like younger fans coming out and paying attention, because this team, as you mentioned, has just captivated us here in New England.
That's awesome, and I'm glad to hear it. Like, you know, from where you guys sit, that's what you hope here. But I'm, you know, like, I had the plumber at the house, and when I said I could maybe get him to a game instead of a cash dip, you want to go to the Reds game, he's like, are you kidding me? That's awesome. I, like, 2 years ago, I'm not sure that conversation goes that way.
Indeed. No, good call on that. And we're getting into an interesting time in the season, because you don't normally get a two-month break mid-season here like we are for the World Cup. I mean, it's going to be the same for everybody, but how do you think 2 months off is going to affect the momentum of the season?
Well, I think everybody has to deal with it, and I think in some ways if the Reds were, you know, if they won, you know, 9 in a row and they take the break now, they're like, no, don't stop the fight. But it's, you know, the Reds have had, you know, like Eli Feingold hasn't been in the lineup. You're still getting some of these other guys like Polster and Ceballos who missed time back to full fitness. You would hope that the Reds would get a healthy Leo Campana coming out of a two-month break. They're not taking the whole 2 months off. Like, everybody, I believe, is mandated 18 days off from the collective bargaining agreement. But the Revs are also doing a camp in Europe. They're actually going to Austria. They're going to play, you know, some scrimmages, friendlies, and do some real training. So they're not just, you know, picking up the remote and working out on their own. And, you know, several, you know, so J.D. Gunn didn't get called into to Panama, which is a bummer, but, you know, guys like Dor Turgeman and Al-Hassan Youssef are getting deserved call-ins to their national teams that aren't at the World Cup, but they're going to play in some friendlies, because all these teams who are, Riley, need friendlies to tune up, and so that could be a great experience and more caps for those guys. And, but I don't think any one MLS team can say that it's more of a momentum breaker for them than anybody else. Everybody's got 2 months. And like I said, you know, from like a staff perspective and a media perspective, because it's for the World Cup, if you're in this sport in any way, shape, or form, I'm sure it's reflected in your programming for your show, right? Like, it's an exciting time. So, you know, nobody's really downshifting. They're just changing their focus.
Yeah, especially if you're working at Gillette Stadium, because it feels like they're not getting any break of this one, especially the staff that are there for those games, with, again, quite a few games listed from Group C, L, I, and, of course, a 32, round of 32 in quarterfinal. I know for me, Brad, I'm really looking forward to, probably in the minority, I know everyone's focused on Norway, France for good reason. I'm a Scotland-Morocco guy. Jeff and I were talking about this earlier today. Can't wait for that game on June 19th. What say you about these games that are going to be right here in New England? Is there any maybe your eyes on? And just how exciting is it to have some really big names from Harry Kane to Erling Haaland and Kylian Mbappe being in the region?
Well, since you bring it up, yeah, France, Norway on June 26th, right? Like, that is, you know, Erling Haaland and Kylian Mbappe, you know, arguably the two most dangerous forwards on the same field. I was shocked to see, not shocked, but surprised to see, this will be the first ever World Cup finals meeting between France and Norway. You know, France, obviously, runners-up last time, won it the time before. Norway, you know, not as favored, you know, but, you know, they always play a muscular style, and they have good players, and you feel like it could be a goal fest if both teams are in a position, or even if one team is in a position where they have to open up to get points. I do not have tickets for that. I'll be watching that on television with most of the rest of us. But the game that I'm stoked for, and, like, yes, Scotland, Morocco. Like, I think I'm gonna go to Iraq, Norway. That should be a, you know, kick in the pants too. But my daughter and I are planning to go to England, Ghana, and nice. That should be a good one too. Depending on how things, you know, stand in the group. But regardless, And, you know, we've got our Paul Mariner jerseys all printed up and ready to go in tribute to my former broadcast partner who starred for the three Lions in the 1982 World Cup. And to have England playing in Foxborough felt like his memory should be honored. And the only thing, as I'd say, like what a treat it would have been to be able to go to the game with Mariner, because, you know, like, no, he'd be giving it loads, as he would say. So, but, you know, his memory, you know, looms large in all of our hearts in Revolution Nation. And so to have England playing there is exciting for me on a personal level, and it should be a great game too.
That's really good stuff. I think all five of these matches in their own way in the group stage are going to be exciting, and obviously anything in the knockout stage is going to be great. I'm going to be real interested to see the two teams that end up matching in the quarterfinals, because I mean, we're probably going to get an historic matchup there too. But great.
Foxborough, Boston Stadium, they're calling it for the
I know. Still, it is so weird, but yes.
I know. I saw they're putting up all the
we
signs.
We can call it Gillette Stadium. Yeah, yeah. So we don't let FIFA tell us what to do. But no, I understand the reasons for it. So sponsorship is a thing. And so, we got a tasty menu in Boston. Looking forward to it. And you know what? It's only since the shutdown of MLS that I've pivoted, and you know, I had a TV hit a couple days ago where I was really sort of drilling down on the roster construction and the upcoming games, and then it hit me between the eyes, like, holy smokes, it's here, it's back, this is the actual World Cup. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've been in the business for a long time, and all of a sudden I felt like, you know, a fan, like not a media member. And you know, like, you know, like you get that, you know, spine tingling, you know, feeling, like I'm old guy, but like, you know, like the last thing I'll say is, like, I've said this a couple other places. For me, I remember this, I'm gonna date myself, but I remember my coach taking my team to a broken down old theater in the Boston's theater district. I think it's what's now the Wang Center. I can't remember what the name of the venue is. I have to look that up again. It wasn't the Opera House. You know, it wasn't Savoy, but it was, you know, it was a legit theater. Mm-hmm. They had closed circuit with terrible audio, and the seats were, you know, busted, and it was smoke filled, and it was Brazil Poland, and both sets of fans were in there. Brazil outnumbered Poland, but they were both repping really well, and they were singing and bouncing the whole time. They're no threat to any fights, but it was very passionate. They're in each other's faces, taunting a little bit, but it was like all in the right spirit. And I'd heard anecdotally that, like, crowds are that passionate, but that was the first time I realized, like, imagine 60, 80,000 people doing this. This is, you know, 800, 1,200 people doing this. And to have it go from that on a closed circuit broadcast to now we're going to have 70,000 people doing that in Foxborough, you got to be juiced if you're a football fan.
Absolutely. It's the best time for us soccer fans, without a doubt. Brad Feldman's the New England Revolution broadcast voice. We obviously love talking Revs with you here, but we'll definitely bring you back over the next month plus here with the World Cup and be talking all about that with you here too, so long as you'll keep coming back.
I'm here for it, man. Let me know.
You got it. All right. Brad Feldman, New England Revolution broadcast voice. We will come right back. We are going to talk a little bit more World Cup. We'll take your phone calls, too. When we return, you've got Middays with Mannix and Mannix.